The Self-Seeking 70s, 1970 to 79. Fads, Part 1. We're going to look at shoes and clothing. Now, ours has been a century of synthetics. The gay 90s had celluloid, the teens cellophane, the roaring 20s vinyl and acetate, 30s acrylics and Melmac, 40s nylon, 50s styrene and formica, the 60s polyester and Teflon. For the 70s, the hip synthetics were Lycra and spandex. For those stretched disco pants, swimwear, and brightly colored jogging attire, as well as fake leather and faux furs. The 70s style began with the confluence of two mighty movements, writes the author of the 70s. Quote, the sexual and the synthetic revolution combined forces to produce some of the ugliest and most outrageous clothing ever seen. So we'll start at the feet. Earth shoes. Environmentalism had been launched by Rachel Carson in the previous decade, but it got a big media boost on April the 22nd, 1970, when Earth Day was declared, a time for mass recycling and consciousness raising. Ecology became a word. The decade's Back to Nature movement was reflected in things as diverse as the creation of the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, the passing of the Clean Air Act, and the consumption of sprouts and grains and organically grown fruits and vegetables. The Earth shoe had patented a negative heel that allowed the wearer to walk the way nature intended, designed by Ann Nalso, a Danish yoga instructor. It was to simulate the print of a bare foot on the soft earth with the heel placed lower than the toes to relieve forward pressure and promote better posture. The shoes were introduced into the United States on Earth Day, origin of the name. They cost from $24 to $50. Now that's in the 70s. That's still a lot of money. Footwear became a runaway fad, spawning more than 85 imitations, including with more than 2 million Calso pairs alone sold by 1975. Dr. Paul Shearer of the California College of Pediatric Medicine in San Francisco studied the shoe and determined that 70% of the wearers developed heel and calf pain in the first 2 weeks, though it would soon subside. The shoe did seem to alleviate the annoyance of bunions. He cautioned diabetics against wearing the shoe because of the unaccustomed pressure on the feet could cause skin problems and bleeding. The dowdy Earth shoe had a glitzy rival. Platform shoes. The elevated orthopedic nightmare began in the 60s with an inch or two added to the sole. A wedgie heel was not new, but the platform toe was an innovation introduced to balance the sexy miniskirt look. Such, said one fashion authority, it cut the seduction aspect of the mini drastically to see a sweet young thing in these clunkers. And two, the shoes eliminated the wiggle in the walk. Entertainers like Elton John helped exaggerate the platform of the ludicrous and dangerous heights while decorating the funky pumps with gold glitter, sequins, popular polka dots. So far removed from the conventional high heels, the platform appealed to both sexes, conferring on the wearer an androgyny that itself was trendy. It kept the foot rigid and made the wearer clomp along gracelessly. Hot pants. The scandalous short shorts, not unknown in Europe to European prostitutes in the decade prior to the 60s, arrived in American fashion on the scene in 1970. Women's Wear Daily christened them hot pants. In leather, lace, ranch mink, velvet, satin, denim, the pants were a fashionable rebellion against the mid-calf midi hemline favored by Paris designers the previous year, itself a replacement for the 60s miniskirt. Hot pants, though, revealed more leg and lower cheek than the shortest mini ever had. They appealed to women at all levels of society. Jane Fonda wore them in the movie Clute. Ursula Andress wore a bronze velvet pair in the fashionable New York restaurant. Jackie Kennedy Onassis bought Halston's hot pants for sunning on her husband's yacht. James Brown extolled the hot pants in a song. David Bowie dared to don them on his first U.S. tour, as did Sammy Davis Jr. in his Las Vegas show. Liberace entertained at the keyboard in a patriotic red, white, and blue pair. California brides married in the white lace hot pants. Designer Valentino debuted all sequined short shorts. And debutantes donned black formal tuxedo hot pants for charity balls. Hot pants became an acceptable attire for everything from supermarket shopping to black tie dining. And in winter, despite intense cold, women wore them to malls, theaters, and dinners beneath long overcoats and minks. Though originally targeted for spring fashion market, the vogue raged throughout the following winter. So widespread was the fad that the conservative-minded Miss American pageant allowed contestants to wear hot pants during their talent competition. At the height of the vogue, Alexander's in New York was selling 1,500 pairs a week. A 7th Avenue fashion executive who had banked on the mid-calf midi told Newsweek, quote, "We don't control the ladies. They control us now," end of quote. When the fad had passed before its second winter, the fashion reverted to streetwalkers and polite society to cheerleaders like the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders. String bikini. What hot pants were to slacks, the 1974 string bikini was to female swimwear, consisting of three triangles of cloth draped over the upper and lower androgynous zones of the female body, held on with strings. The micro swimsuit, costing from $35 to $45, sold out in New York's Bloomingdale's 2 weeks after it was introduced. From the French Riviera to Long Island, Jones Beach, the sexy string was all the summertime rage, though decidedly among slender younger women. The fashion is thought to have begun on Ipanema Beach in Rio de Janeiro. It was a pattern on the skimpy loincloths once worn by coastal Brazilian natives, though it captured the bare essence of the decade's swinging singles theme. The Vogue enjoyed one summer in the sun, perhaps because it was quickly spoofed by designer Rudy Gingrich and his boldly bottomless bikini known as the thong, worn by both men and women. Giving considerable, if discreet, press coverage, the thong made a joke of the string, and therefore, first blush of fall, both fads were forgotten. Tank tops. The fad of the sleeveless t-shirt, the tank top, peaked around 1973. The garment became the symbol of an informal dress for the country's youth. The design is thought to have originated in Europe among women in the experimental years of the early 60s, when going braless, for it was a brazen statement. At the time, the tank top was an alternative to the tube top and the halter top. In America, though, it quickly became a unisex top, and following gay liberation, it became a summer costume of the village clone, one of several gay stereotypes, including the leather man, the construction worker, and the biker, made recognizable to the mainstream by the band called the Village People. When the California muscle culture emerged mid-decade, the tank top came to be the respectable way to showcase bulging biceps, leviathan lats, petrous pecs, and other muscle groups. Whereas other fashion fads died out, the unpretentious, inexpensive, practical tank top eventually became a quiet undershirt. Jazzed-up jeans and designer labels. Blue jeans were the 1800s brainchild of immigrant tailor Levi Strauss, made from heavy-duty tent canvas and sold to Californian panhandlers during the gold rush boom. But from the start, the jeans underwent alterations. Cowboys preferred snug-fitting pants, sat in water troughs to soak their jeans, then lay them out in the sun to shrink them. Miners, unencumbered by etiquette of underwear, found that squatting too near a campfire heated the copper crotch rivets to give a painful burn. It was abandoned. In the 30s, American schoolteachers complained the back pocket rivets on the jeans of children were gouging wooden desk seats. Pocket rivets were then abandoned. In that same decade, the strictly utilitarian garment became a hot fashion item, and when an advertisement appeared in Vogue featuring two society women in tight-fitting jeans in a look called Western Chic. Several jean fads followed. The 40s Vogue of denim jeans with saddle oxfords and a sloppy out-of-pants shirt tail. The 50s looks of jeans rolled up to the knees, tight sweater, dark sunglasses, cigarette holder, and highball glass. Those fads, though, were minor compared to the one that erupted in the 70s. The phenomena of jazzed-up jeans began when counterculture youths began personalized their fad tattered pants with patches, creative stitching work, painted messages, and studded designs. The decorative jean arrived at a time when teens were searching for their own code of dress and means of self-expression. Levi Strauss's tent canvas pants became a personal billboard. 7th Avenue, spotting a new market, introduced tight-fitting jeans embellished with rhinestones, sequins, silk applique, frills, and lace, intended for a more upscale audience. At Vassar, to wear a full-length mink coat over a pair of jeans became the height of the devil-may-care chic. But when big-name designers like Calvin Klein and Gloria Vanderbilt entered the jeans market, out went the decorative appliques and in came costly designer labels. The label for what one paid for, usually stitched across the upper right buttock. DoorDash, Sassoon, and Sergio became synonymous for trendy jeans. And at the close of the decade, when Calvin Klein introduced TV viewers to young Brooke Shields wriggling into her Calvins and purring, "Know what comes between me and my Calvins? Nothing." The pants, once intended for hard work, became ultimate costume for serious play. At the height of the design jean wars, Calvin Klein jeans, despite the high price of $50, or because of it, were selling at the rate of 250,000 pairs a week. No doubt, Levi Strauss himself would have been flattered. Well, that's, we're going to stop at this point and pick this up next time, but a couple of comments. Dollar values are really troublesome here, because I believe the minimum wage was something like $2.50 or maybe $3 an hour in the 70s, and it could be significantly less, because I remember making like $1.60 on some occasions. So that gives you a little better view on that. I did have a girlfriend then when I first started going to college who I loved with her nice little hot pants, but that didn't last. And as far as the jeans that were tailored or made for different people, when I was a teacher, I had an African-American student who painted jeans with various motifs that different students liked. Well, the district was kind of not happy with it. So I asked him to do a pair of them for me, and I wore them to class. It was a little harder for the administration to complain about people. They did call me into the office and talk to me, but it wasn't anything really special. And like I said, the fad kind of died out at some point. And of course, bell bottoms were very important because I wore a bell-bottom three-piece suit in white linen for my interview for my job at the high school that I ended up teaching for 30 years, and which I still have. I have a lot of my old clothes from this time period. So anyway, we'll continue with that next. Now, the source for this, Panati's Parade of Fads, Follies, and Manias, The Origins of Our Most Cherished Obsessions, of course, by Charles Panati. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.